So hello everyone, this is Jennifer Sparrow. I'm here today with Fred Miller. He's the CIO of Furman University. Fred, welcome.
Thank you.
We're here today to talk a little bit about higher ed IT professional development. So I'd like you to, as we have this conversation, think about your own professional development and share any stories that you might have. But I'm curious as to what you see as the biggest roadblock for higher ed professionals in developing their skills to grow in their field.
Well, we're talking about higher ed IT professionals, right?
Correct.
Okay. Because even though the people that work in IT and higher ed are higher ed professionals, we have an interesting challenge because we're both higher ed professionals and IT professionals. So the biggest roadblock, it's very basic. It's time, I think. It's either time or money. At your institution, it might be money, but really just finding the time to become the person you're meant to be can be a challenge.
I wonder, Fred, as you think about how you develop your own staff or as you've been growing in your career as you've been growing your career.
Well, my career is, I think I'm one of the sages at EDUCAUSE. I just finished my sixth year at Furman, and this is actually my 30th fall semester working in higher education. So I've seen a lot of changes, and that's pretty much what we deal with is change. That's what the higher ed IT professional does, is help the institution deal with change.
Have you seen really excellent or exemplary models of how to help IT professionals address change?
I think the challenge with higher ed IT professionals is twofold, both the higher ed and the IT. Quite often I see people come into higher ed as a technology person, and they think, okay, I'm a system administrator, I'm XYZ, I'm focused on this technology. And getting them to understand the business of higher ed, how things are a little bit different. What is tenure? What is a junior faculty member? Why might a junior faculty member be a little bit stressed 5 years into working at the institution? These are interesting things that technology professionals need to learn. At the same time, if you've got somebody that has really good technical skills and you want them to learn the business of higher ed, it really does become important for them to be good people, to have good listening skills, to be able to have a conversation with faculty, staff, students. So it's an interesting blend of skills, and how you develop those is really something you have to work on one-to-one as a person who brings these young professionals along. Everybody's different, and there's no real one prescription for how a person should develop. It really is an individual situation.
I so appreciate that, because I think you talked about time initially. We don't often, I think, as professionals in general, set aside time to focus on and think about and reflect about where we are and where we want to be and what does that path look like to get there, and then match that up with where the needs of the institution are. So for me, I think that's a sort of a great perspective. It's both time and a reflective opportunity with someone who can mentor that process.
Well, the other thing you have to realize is, is it from Fiddler on the Roof where it was, there's a saying in there that says, man plans and God laughs. A lot of what we think are going to be, all right, this is my plan, this is what I'm going to do, that may not be what actually happens. And you have to be aware of, as you said, reflect and say, okay, what's the best thing I can do in this situation? Because what you actually end up being may not be the path you started down. I'll give you an example. When I was at Case Western years and years ago studying music, I thought I was going to be a rock star.
I think you still could be.
Didn't quite turn out that way. Actually got my first job in higher education working at the Berklee College of Music.
Great.
And found out that I actually loved working with not just the technology, but the people at the institution. And that's really what attracted me. And what I hope somebody that wants to be a higher ed IT professional can find that motivation from working with the people, not just the faculty and the staff, but the students as well. Because what we do in higher education really does change people's lives.
I think you're absolutely correct. So I'm interested, Fred, when you meet a smart, young, higher ed IT professional with ambition, was the top three pieces of advice to him or her?
The person with ambition, right?
Sure.
Ambition is a curious word because, again, it gets back to this, what do I want to do? And what I want to do may not necessarily be what the institution needs. So when somebody says, I have some ambition, or they talk as if they have ambition, I have to ask them, you know, what is it that's motivating you? And if it's if they're very self-oriented, mm-hmm. that's going to be a challenge. Really, if you're talking about three things that I would recommend a higher ed IT professional think about, it's really Daniel Pink talks about in his book Drive what motivates people. He talks about autonomy, mastery, and purpose. IT people really don't have a problem with the mastery one. We're always trying to learn new technology. That's great. So mastery, yes, we can all master that. Purpose, we're working in higher education, which is a great place to work. I don't need to talk too much about that. Autonomy is an interesting one because when we work in higher education, a lot of what we do is collaboration. So you really have to know how to get along with people. There may be a role for somebody that wants to stick in a back room and do technology, but they're few. So when I talk about three pieces of advice, I would tell somebody, you need to be humble, you need to be other-centered, and you need to be self-sacrificing. You need to make sure that you can contribute as best you can, and that probably means paying attention to what's around you, what do others need, not so much what do I need. If you pay attention to others, they'll be happy to work with you. And, you know, I'm so grateful, for example, Jennifer, for you doing this. I think this is wonderful. And getting that message out to people, try and be humble, try and be other-centered, and the hard one, self-sacrificing. If you can do that, you're going to go a long way as a higher ed IT professional.
Great. That's, I think, great pieces of advice, Fred. Thank you. I'm curious, if you can be honest. I hope you've been honest so far. But
that's a really curious way to phrase a question. Here I am just talking about, you know, how to be a good person. You're asking me to be honest. I am honest, really. Come on.
Are the opportunities for higher ed IT professionals greater than or diminished from 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
And or 30 years
or
ago.
Or 30 years ago, right. So, yeah, you've entered your 30th year here. So
yeah, I'm not completely gray yet. I don't know how that happened.
Perfect.
I don't know. I do know that it's changed a lot. I mean, we were talking 5 years ago. Nobody would have, I think, or few people would have thought the cloud solutions would be as pervasive as they are now. So at our shop, what we've seen is trying to reorient people where we used to, say, 5-10 years ago, thinking about systems. And now our focus is less on the systems and the care and feeding of the machines, but more on the services we provide, which when you talk about being able to collaborate to improve the institution, that's really the right place to be, is what services do we provide the institution? How can we make those services better? So the opportunities are probably less in the actual technology, except for, of course, you've got to integrate it with all these various cloud providers. So that's changed as well. How do you have these ID solutions? There are technical challenges, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But really the challenge continues to be, how do you help the institution manage change?
Sure. And I think to me, Fred, that's a really interesting question because you talk about more things being outsourced, more things moving to the cloud. So you have a really great person who's been your email administrator for many years, and now you're a Google shop. And I'm using this example. I don't know if Furman is a Google shop.
Or Office 365.
Okay, all right, Office 365. We're platform agnostic here. What advice do you give or what counsel do you give or what professional development opportunities do you provide for that really excellent email administrator if that job no longer exists?
Well, in our case, that job still does exist. It's just very different.
Okay.
So she's doing a lot of working with PowerShell. And as far as development, she's actually here at EDUCAUSE this week, talking with Sienna what other people are doing. But her role has certainly changed. Mm-hmm. And she does continue to work with people on campus and come up with different solutions. So I wouldn't say that her role has been outsourced, but what she does on a daily basis has changed, and it's helped our services because we've streamlined and automated a lot. So I mean, both our provisioning and our deprovisioning now are automated, but there's always the exception, and she handles that. And trying to make things even easier for people to use continues to be a challenge.
Great. I'd like to switch gears here for just a moment. Can you tell us about the service quality assessments that you work on with Tim Chester and how that dovetails into the subject of development of the profession?
Well, the TechQual surveys, when you talk about the development of the profession and figuring out where the institution needs to go, that is part of our governance process. Of course, we have our governance committees, but this actually is open to the campus community, and we get excellent feedback. Some of it is hard to hear, and we were thinking we're doing well, and somebody, you know, calls a spade, and okay, this isn't working so well. Let's see what we can do to make that better. And so in that regard, we've been doing this. Right now, we have our 7th annual TechQual survey going. Last year, the response was really positive. This year, it's changed a little bit, and we're saying, okay, when we do our planning, which we'll be doing after this EDUCAUSE conference, it's kind of nice that most of my senior team is here talking to the vendors and all that, and we'll be putting together our budgets after this meeting and taking the input from the service quality survey and saying, okay, we actually have a retreat on the 14th talking about what are the top 10 things we need to do this year. And once we get the top 10, I'll be saying, okay, what are the top three? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is shaped by what our community tells us, and those surveys are helpful, although sometimes painful, but always helpful.
When you do the service quality assessments,
have you tried that survey?
I have not tried that
survey. It's really interesting because there's 13 standard questions that every institution uses.
Okay.
And he asks each question the person to rate the minimum service level, desired service level, and perceived service level. Now, some people say, well, you got 13 questions, but really you got three times that.
Right.
It really doesn't take but 10 minutes for people to answer.
Sure.
And they can put comments on it the whole bit. And we look to say, okay, how do we rate towards minimum pretty much? It's rare that somebody says we provide a service that is greater than they desire. but that's how we do those very 13, and we actually added a 14th one for the institution. So it doesn't take but 10 minutes to do. And we look, and Tim's done a great job. He actually does some tests for significance statistically to say, okay, which of these answers are positive for your entire community or a subset, which are negative. And so for this year, I'm looking at the early results, and I'm thinking, yep, we got to pay more attention to the portal. They're dinging us for it.
Sure. So,
okay, we'll do it.
Good feedback, though, to have, because mm-hmm. it allows you to think strategically about that.
Yeah, we actually used it a few years ago to justify with the trustees a substantial investment in the wireless network.
Terrific.
Yeah, so, it really helps.
It helps to have that data mm-hmm. to tell our story. I'm curious about thinking about what we do in IT as service versus being a strategic partner for the functions of the university. So I'm imagining it for men like other places, you know, teaching and research, and for many cases, outreach becomes sort of our three major goals. Many times IT is seen as a service provider. So how do you balance this need for really high quality service, particularly when you're assessing it, while still maintaining this understanding at the institution that IT provides a strategic value to our mission and vision?
Yeah, well, that's what we use. I mentioned that the survey was part of our IT governance process. Certainly, we work with that with our cabinet members. We have an information technology advisory council. We talk about strategic things. We have a couple of other groups, academic computing committee and enterprise systems advisory group that talks about more tactical things. tying it to the strategy really does need to be something the CIO makes sure happens. We're the ones that try and juggle those competing interests and help people understand that when IT is tied to the institution's strategy, we can all be more successful.
Anything else you'd like to add? Last words of wisdom?
My last words of wisdom is just, I'm so grateful for you for doing this, Jennifer. You've doing a wonderful job. And I'm also grateful, if anybody from EDUCAUSE is listening to this, hey, Jerry, I am so grateful for all everybody does to support this organization, because it helps us develop the IT profession. And it is really one of the best things that could possibly be going on right now. And for those of you that are listening, try and participate in EDUCAUSE, because it will help.
I could not agree with you more, Fred. I have done both the Learning Technology Leadership Program and the Leading Change Institute. And it's not just the knowledge that you gain as a professional. These are the knowledge and skills I need to do this job. But it's that network of peers that really supports you throughout all of that growth. And I cannot say enough good stuff about what the opportunities are here as well. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. I wish you the best with all of this.